Good morning. My name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. This morning's guest on With Respect is Charles Osgood, a photographer for a newspaper, but also in his private life. Charles Osgood, we'll be right back. Charles, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well, considering.
You are.
Yeah, no, here I am in Harbor Country. How bad could it be? You know,
it's not
the
bad.
Weather is fantastic
for the first time.
Well, it was when it was 80.
Well, we had one day,
one Sunday.
One day was
which
nice.
I was here, and it was nice.
You were lucky. You live here part time or full time?
No, I live in Chicago, and I come up here whenever I can. Or do you say over here?
Well, over here. It's like, you know.
It's more over here.
Cohan. George M. Cohan. Over here, over here.
Yeah, he's talking about Michigan, right?
I'm talking about Michigan. All right. Where did you get started? Where do you come from originally?
Where did I get started in life?
In life.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, you're asking me the tough questions at the beginning.
These are the tough questions. Who is it? Tristram Shandy was in the biography. Lawrence Stern wrote Tristram Shandy, and he starts off with, I don't remember much of the date of my birth. It goes on from there.
Yeah, just like Obama.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you happen to see what is it, the newspaper club, the journalist club, the once a year thing where they roast?
The White House Press Corps.
White House Press Corps, the video.
Not.
Oh, God, is that a stitch?
Well, but now let's get...
All right, back to me. Who cares?
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
Well, I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from a place called Wauwatosa.
Yes.
Can you spell that?
Wauwatosa, Wauwatosa.
You're almost right.
Almost right?
Wauwa.
Oh, darn it.
Affectionately known as...
myself.
Affectionately known as Tosa, suburb of Milwaukee, and born, raised there.
Where'd you go to school?
Ripon College.
Ah, Republican. The Republican
birthplace parties. Of the Republican Party, they claim. There's another town that claims that as
exactly.
well.
Jackson, Michigan.
Jackson, oh, is
Michigan.
It?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I was thinking someplace in Arkansas, but maybe that's
the
third.
Oh, no, horrors. No, no. No, it's Jackson, Michigan, and Ripon, Wisconsin, are the two contenders for the title of the founding of the Republican Party.
Yeah, but allow me to correct you, because everyone makes the mistake. It's Ripon, not Ripon.
Oh.
Yeah. You can file that away, and don't ever...
Make that mistake again. I duly corrected. I am now duly corrected. All right. So, Ripon College?
Ripon College.
What did you specialize in? What was your major?
I was a psych major. I was there with the same time as Al Jarreau and a guy by the name of Harry Ford that maybe somebody has heard of.
Okay.
Harrison Ford?
Well, that guy.
That Harry Ford. Yeah. I mean, people that don't know him call him Harrison.
Oh, do they? But you know him intimately and well, right?
Not for years.
But now, so psych major?
Psych major,
so what
right.
So what were you going to do with that?
Hell, I don't know. Is that, am I allowed to say that?
That's all right.
Okay.
That's about as far as we go.
Yeah,
here.
Okay. And it just slipped out. I don't know. No, I just needed a major. I knew I didn't want to do anything in psych, really. I took a beginning psych course and thought this was a lot of fun, because you get to look at pictures that either, like, for example, look like, do you see an old lady in this, or do you see a young woman?
You know,
those sort of game things I liked. I started out as a math major and switched.
And what, if you, when you were 10 years old, like everybody else had a goal in life, you were going to be a?
I didn't know. I had no idea. I started being interested in photography, I think from my dad, who took lots of home movies, and I really liked those. Mm-hmm. And I guess he took stills. He took mostly pictures of flowers. Mm-hmm. And so any vacation we went on, we'd have to sit through a lot of flower pictures.
I imagine in the wintertime then, when they brought over their friends and their your family and whatnot, and you sat and you looked at orchids and dandelions and tulips.
Right.
That was
right.
A substitute for, oh, and by the way, there's
there's Niagara Falls,
the
yeah.
There's Niagara Falls. So when you did you get your own camera?
When I was seven, I sent in 55 cents in coin. It had to be in coin, as you remember. Mm-hmm. And two Wheaties box tops, and I got my first camera and two rolls of film.
Hubba hubba. What kind of a camera was it, a Brownie?
I have no idea. In fact, I called Wheaties once to find out if they knew what it was, and all they could tell me is that they have a listing that cameras were given or were sent, sold in the late 40s, but they had no idea what they were. So.
Well, it's almost like I bought 2 square inches of Alaska once.
Did you?
I did too. Did you?
Oh my God! I wonder if we're connected.
We may be.
We may own land together.
We find there the strangest bonds between people on this show.
I can. So, in fact, I think I just ran across my certificate of ownership within the last year or two when I was going through old
I've
stuff.
I've lost mine.
Oh, so there's no proof.
There's no proof.
I still have my proof of ownership.
All right, but. What did you like taking pictures of when you started? Family?
My friends.
Yeah?
So the first day that I got the camera, my friends and I went out to this woods where there was a rope swing. It was woods on a hole, on a hill, inside of a hill, and there's a rope swing. And so I got lots of pictures of them swinging. And that's when I realized that about shutter speeds. I didn't know exactly how to frame it then, but... So there's a lot of blurred pictures. But I managed to go through both rolls of film within 2 hours and brought them back home. And I said, hey, Mom. And for some reason, she didn't have the same excitement about that I did.
Look, let's face it. You know, she had your father to deal with and a camera and taking pictures of flowers.
No, it was more like she had to deal with the cost of getting this film processed and printed. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, I'll do it this time and I'll buy you one more roll of film, but it's better last for a while.
And did it?
I think I made it last for a week or something.
All right. What did you, you said you started taking pictures of your friends. At some point you figured out about shutter speed. And
I think so. I'm still working on that. But
but you stopped getting blurs or as many blurs as you were.
I think so. Yeah.
So what did you move on to? Did you take any courses in photography?
Well, I moved on to a Brownie Hawkeye first. And I took that to summer camps that I went to. In fact, I went to 2 summer camps in Michigan.
Where?
Camp Minnewanka.
Where's that?
Who knows? Somewhere. And I think that was a church camp. And some other one. I can't remember.
Now, when you were in grammar school and in high school, did you ever think, I'm going to make my life doing this, taking pictures?
Never did, no. I think what I wanted to do is go to Hollywood and be a part of the Hollywood industry.
Why?
And, just the excitement of movie stars and glamour and celebrity and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then I had no training in it, and I knew it was impossible to. I was told that it's very unlikely that would ever happen, so I just kind of put it out of my mind. Yeah.
So then you graduated with a psych major, not knowing what you were going to do with it.
Exactly. Except I was in ROTC, so I knew. I was covered for the next 2 years.
When was that? What years?
64.
Vietnam time?
It was in 64, so Vietnam was heating up, but there wasn't a war yet. Mm-hmm. It was before. When was Gulf of Tonkin?
67.
No.
65. 65, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So I joined the Army as a lieutenant, I was in the Signal Corps, and I was at Fort Gordon, Georgia, and during one of the classes, they said, how many people want to go to jump school? And nobody raised their hand, and I had always sort of been fascinated about parachuting. And we used to play in a church playground when we were kids, and they had a really tall chimney, and we all fantasized about getting to the top of that chimney and jumping off, you know. So nobody raised their hand, and I'm always sort of like, I don't want to do what anybody else wants to do. So since nobody else wanted to, I raised my hand. And I also am the type that I put myself in a situation that I know I can't wiggle out of. So I kind of force myself into doing things that I sort of want to do, but I know it's really going to be arduous. Mm-hmm. But so I was it. You know, you can't back out. That's it.
At that point, no.
No, you put your hand up and the major has your number.
Didn't you understand? Weren't you there when they handed out the rules, never volunteer?
I didn't learn that till later. But anyway, I have to say that jump school was by far the best thing I ever did in the military.
Really?
By far. It was the best training I ever had. It was no nonsense. It was really hard, but there was a purpose to it, which is a lot of military is really hard, but it's really ridiculous and there's right. no purpose. And I felt like I was so well-trained. I was what's called a five-jump wonder. So you've got to do five jumps in order to get your wings. Mm-hmm. And the first jump, first of all, there's nothing more exciting than parachuting. Mm-hmm. You don't feel like you're falling. You feel like you're floating. And you jump out of the plane. You don't have to pull the cord yourself. It's on the static line. Mm-hmm. And in 5 seconds, the chute is open, and you're kind of saying, hallelujah, it's great. And then you just float. And then after, I don't know, a few seconds, because you jump from 1,200 feet, then you notice the ground coming up. But you've been trained to do PLFs.
PLFs?
Parachute landing fall.
Okay. Right. This is good.
And so as soon as the tips of your toes hit the ground, then you kind of go into you twist your body and you roll. Mm-hmm. And so the first jump was really hard. I landed hard. It was really bad. Mm. Every jump after that got worse. The last jump,
you broke four legs, right?
I landed feet, ass, and head, you know, backwards. Oh, smashed my head on the helmet and cut myself and jumped up and screamed, airborne! Because I knew I'd never have to do it again.
Hoo-ha! <Yeah. laughs> So that was it?
That was it. I was airborne. I got to walk around, have the have the pride of wearing the wings of airborne, because it was very cool. Not too many mm-hmm. people were airborne. But like you said about not volunteering, it could have gotten me into big trouble, because being airborne, they could have actually grabbed you to be in an airborne unit.
Oh, no. Perish the thought.
Really? Or parachute the shot.
I'm
sorry.
No. That was very painful.
But I was in the Signal Corps. I knew I was going to Korea. And that was for 13 months. Korea was considered hazardous duty. Mm-hmm. So you got hazardous duty pay, which was an extra 15 cents or something. And then I would have had I come back to the States, I would have had about 6 months more to do. I learned that by this time Vietnam War was going on. I learned that it was going to, what would happen is you came back to the States, they send you to Vietnam, even mm-hmm. if you only had 6 months. Mm-hmm. That was crazy, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to go there. So I extended my tour of duty.
In Korea?
To Korea, yeah. Yeah. So
Were you taking pictures at that time? You say Signal Corps.
So I was just starting to get serious about it. When I got to Korea, I was able to get a Nikon for $150. Mm-hmm. The Nikon camera with the normal 50mm lens. Mm-hmm. And then, I got a couple of other lenses while I was there.
We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Charles Osgood, photographer extraordinaire, parachute jumper, and we're going to find out more in just a minute. We'll be right back. We're now back with Charles Osgood, photographer, parachutist, tough guy, probably learned the Korean language.
I'm not that tough, no. I did actually learn a little bit of Korean. I took classes. I learned probably, it seems like a really difficult language to read, mm-hmm. but it's actually very easy. It's only 28 characters, mm-hmm. and so it's not like Chinese or Japanese. You mm-hmm. know, it's a readable alphabet, so it's very handy, not because you know what you're reading so much, unless it's the name of the city.
Mm, so then that becomes useful when you're
driving. Yeah. Yeah, because I went back with my wife and baby back in 1981, which was, 20 years afterwards or so, and we rented a car, and we drove around, and we were completely lost, and I saw a sign that said Seoul. Seoul, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So. See it all that.
Otherwise, I might still be there.
You might still be there. Yeah. And will he ever return? No, he'll never return. Charlie's on the MTA.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, all right. It became more than just a hobby, photography. How did that happen?
Well, I wanted to actually take over. There was a photo. Signal, every signal unit has their own photo platoon, mm-hmm. and I really wanted to take over that, but for some reason that didn't happen. So I came back to Chicago. I came back to Milwaukee and got a job actually at American Airlines in a management training program because I was trained really for nothing. You know, I knew how to stab dummies with a bayonet, mm-hmm. and scream kill, which when we're learning how to do that, found very funny. But
today that would be very useful as a political advisor. Mm-hmm. Stab dummies who want to run for political office. It's called opposition research.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
So anyway, I got a job in management training at American Airlines, and that didn't work out. I was there for a year and a half, and it was very clear to me and became clear to them that I was not management material. I'd already been a second lieutenant in the Army for 2 years and realized I was not management material. But again, I wasn't trained for anything. So we parted our ways. And then I thought, okay, I'm unemployed. I got a few bucks. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? And I just realized that I wanted to do something that I love doing. And the only thing I could think of was photography. So I started looking around for jobs in photography, including just working in a photo shop. There's a place called Altman Cameras, which was...
I know Altman Cameras. Yeah, downtown Chicago.
Right. I was on Wabash. And it was the place to go for camera equipment. So There was also something called City News Bureau.
Oh, yeah.
And City News Bureau was like a local wire service, like AP or UPI, that brought in stories for the local press. At that time, there were four newspapers. There was radio stations, there were TV stations. They all subscribed to City News. Mm-hmm. So I walked in there and I applied. And when on your application, you say, what do you want to do? And I wrote down photographer. For you had to write down, you know, list your top mm-hmm. three or something. I said photographer, reporter, sports writer or something. And then left and didn't think anything about it. And then Altman's called me up and he said, you're hired. So I went to work for Altman's for 2 weeks, and then City News called and they said, you're hired. So I gave up my hard-earned position at Altman's, went over to City News. And the first day is orientation, and this guy by the name of John Jello was a reporter, and he took me around and he kind of showed me Chicago and where I would be working, which was in a police station in Brighton Park. Mm-hmm. And that's what City News kids did, is they just kind of hung out in police mm-hmm. stations, which is a great way to get stories. It's a very hard, you get mostly junk stories, but every so often you'll find a story that's really good mm-hmm. that otherwise would never be reported. Mm-hmm. So I went to, he showed me Brighton Park and I said, oh, by the way, how many photographers do you have here? And he looked at me and he said, photographers? I said, yeah, I was hired as a photographer, right? He said, there aren't any photographers here. He said, there aren't? I said, what am I, a reporter? And he said, yeah, you're a reporter. I said, I've never done that. I don't know. It sounds like fun.
So you became a reporter?
I became a reporter. Worked out of Brighton Park first and then worked out of police headquarters at 11th and State mm-hmm. in the press room where there were like five or six or seven, mostly guys. There was one woman at the Tribune that worked there. And that was really fun. I mean, I totally loved reporting, mm-hmm. but I wasn't writing. I mean, what you do is you get the story, you'd phone it in to rewrite, give them all the information, and they would write it up.
So. My brother was a journalism student. He went to got his degree, his master's in journalism at Northwestern at Medill, and. One of the things that he did, I think, he worked for the Medill News Service in Chicago and used to go and sit in City Hall and mm-hmm. Women's Court and various other places. And he said, great stories. Yeah. Great stories came out of there.
Oh, it was really neat. You could go cover the court. And as a city news kid, the judge would take you under his wing and he said, oh, no, come on, you come up, sit next to me. So I'd sit right next to the judge, and these people would come up and plead their case, and send them to jail, or whatever you did. You know. But it was really fun. That was Holiday Court, and I don't know if anything, you know about Holiday Court, so yeah. My gosh, yeah. So Holiday Court was on weekends, and that's when they bring in all the people who had been booked on Friday night, and there isn't real court until Monday morning, so they mm-hmm. try to decide what to do with you over the weekend. And you get some really rascals in there.
But no photography yet.
No photography, no. So then the Tribune called, and the Tribune sometimes, and you know, all the papers would hire from City News quite frequently. So they called City News, and they said they needed somebody, and I was sent over there. And interviewed by three guys. And one of the things, this is so embarrassing, one of the things they asked me was, what do I think of the Tribune? And I said, well, I think it's a good newspaper, but I don't agree with the editorial policy. I had no idea what the editorial policy was, but I just knew I couldn't possibly agree with it. I was a Sun-Times guy. I was a Daily News guy, but certainly not a Tribune guy. But I loved the building, which is true. I still love the
building. It's a
beautiful building. Oh, it's a great building.
Yeah.
So
these three?
And I went in my Fry boots. And a mustache, which was very daring back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
To the Tribune, yeah. Colonel McCormick saw you, and you'd be out in the street.
Well, he was dead for a while by then.
All right, okay.
So anyway, I went back figuring I didn't get the job, and they called me and they said, you're hired. And so I went over on October 6, 1969, day after my birthday, and started out as a reporter for Neighborhood News, mm-hmm. where they had Neighborhood News South, West, and North. Mm-hmm. I was Neighborhood News South. I knew nothing at all about the southern suburbs. I had never been there, you know. So mm-hmm. I went to Park Forest South, and Harvey, and you know, Crete Moni, and all those places. Covered, you know, village hall meetings, which were really inspiring, and did that for a while. And then I, you could always, as a reporter, you could ask for a photographer to get pictures of some story, and I would do that. And frequently, they wouldn't have anybody available, so I started taking pictures for my own stories. And they, and I asked, you know, can I do this? And he said, well, yeah, if you bring in the prints, but you can't use the darkroom here. So I'd go home and I'd process the film in my bathroom. And then I had the Bessler 23C that I'd bought from Altman's. And I made a print, I brought it, and it was published. And it was really exciting.
And that was it. Now there's the career is born, right?
Well, sort of. And then after about 6 months of reporting, I was called into my boss's office. And he said, not in these exact words, but he said, you know, Charlie, there's an opening in photography, and you might want to consider that since you're not really a writer. And so I wasn't really ready to go. I mean, I was still learning so much about the writing end of it that I wasn't ready, but I knew I was smart enough to know that I better take this opportunity now, and I made the leap.
So then it started. Now we're starting?
Yeah, well, actually, it started maybe a month before that when I took my first photo class at IIT. So I tell people I did everything. I kind of stumbled into this backwards. I did everything sort of backwards. So I took my first photo class, started in January, and switched to photography in February with, as you can imagine, all this great experience behind it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Parachute jumping, learning about don't volunteer anymore, writing about City Hall, the 11th and State. And now
don't forget Neighborhood News and
Village hit meetings. The big time.
Yeah, yeah. So I was a Tribune photographer. Well, how cool is that? Yeah. So then I was taking my beginning photo course at IIT and took over the next couple of years took more photo courses there, and then I switched I took some courses at not courses at Columbia, but Columbia had these wonderful workshops. They bring in the greatest photographers in the world. I mean, really, the top names you can think of. And they would do a lecture on Thursday night, and then on Friday night they would start a 3-day workshop. Mm-hmm. So I studied.
Who were some of the great photographers?
I was hoping
time?
You wouldn't ask me because I can't think of anything.
Was there Stieglitz?
Oh, well, he was long gone. But I don't know. Let's come back
Joseph
to that one.
Karsh.
He was long gone too.
Okay.
Who were the great photographers? Can we take a break and I'll come back up with it.
Subconscious processing. Yeah. But you went the types of photography that goes into a newspaper. Has it changed from the time that you started till now? And I'm talking about the use of photography as a part of the presentation by a newspaper.
I don't think it's changed in 100 years, really. I mean, in some you know, sometimes the pictures run bigger, sometimes smaller, mm-hmm. but they're still what they are.
The purpose, we're gonna take a break right now. When we come back, I'm gonna talk about what is the purpose of photography in a newspaper? Theoretically, you're talking about news, but now you're adding photography to it. You're adding images, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. We'll take a break right now. We're talking to Charles Osgood. Once again, I will call him the photographer extraordinaire because he's also a producer of books as well as the work he did with the Chicago Tribune. We'll be right back. We're back now with Charles Osgood, who is the resident specialist in photography for Western Michigan, right? Is that true?
Say that again.
I just made that up. All right. What is the role of a picture in a newspaper, in the conveying of the news?
I should ask you back, what's the role of a story?
All right.
Because I don't think there's really any difference. You know, photojournalism is journalism mm-hmm. with pictures. So it's telling a story with pictures, and it does it, the purpose is to do the same thing that a written story does, but it just does it in a visual medium.
Well, you know, I was thinking about photography generally, and it struck me that there's at least four different things that photography does. And I'm going to toss them out for you and see what you think. And how many of these apply to the type of work you've been doing? Well, first of all, there's photography as recording an event, sort of a history, a visual history of something.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's photography, which is taking that event, and it has some meaning, and you want to use it for advocacy. You know, I think of many pictures that are used to show a particular candidate, for example, who is, yes, this is a photograph, but it shows something about them. It conveys something. Or the famous Vietnam picture of the little girl running naked, having been napalmed. So that's sort of an advocacy. The way it's used after the photograph is taken is this is the horror of war. But also it's art. It's now and has been for many decades a medium for expressing something about the flower or life or people or something like that, but in an artistic sense. And then finally, I've looked at it, and I think even more so now, but maybe the last 100 years since Matthew Brady, it's also a social thing. I can now bond with my daughter or my girlfriend or my family at a distance. I can show them who I am, and it's a way of establishing and maintaining contact.
Mm.
So it's a social medium.
Right, but which is not photojournalism.
Is not photojournalism, that's right. Where does photojournalism fit into those? Maybe you have other ways of describing the use of photographs, but I'm just toss those four out.
Well, it's a couple things. It documents news in aesthetic a way, I guess, ideally. So it combines documentation and art. Newspaper photography is almost everything. It's sports, it's fashion, it's tabletop pictures, if you're doing a story on orange juice or something. And so newspaper photography incorporates not only photojournalism, which is more news, mm-hmm. but almost every other kind of photography you can think of.
When you went out to a story, you worked with a reporter, or you worked on your own, or both?
Both, but I would say mostly on your own.
What would you be looking for? You know, you get a call, there's a there's an accident in on 63rd and Stony, or whatever. What are you looking for?
Well, in photojournalism, you're looking for emotion. If you're taking pictures of people, it's emotion. Whether they're happy, they're sad, they're angry, you know, that's going to convey better than anything else what the story is about. So if there's a loss of a loved one, you know, they're upset, almost becomes trite in a way if it's not done right. And it's very difficult to get it so that it's not trite. Mm-hmm. You get people holding up pictures of their deceased, but it's very difficult to come up with a different way when you have limited space. You only mm-hmm. have one picture. So mm-hmm. you want to show the picture of the deceased, or you want to show the picture of the people that are, upset, mourning. So you combine those two somehow. Mm-hmm. But it's all about. I teach at Columbia. I have taught at Columbia. I'm not sure I still teach there anymore. But, and that's so important when I'm teaching. What I try to teach the students is it's all about human emotion.
Well, one or more of the signal cameramen in the Second World War produced many famous photographs, but the preeminent photograph for recording an event, and yet also as advocacy and also as emotion, did not show the faces of any. It was the raising of the flag on Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima.
Yeah, yeah.
And that captured. That was an amazing event, mm-hmm. We now know that it was one of a series of staged events.
Right. Do it again.
Do it again. That's right.
Which would be totally illegal in today's ethics of journalism.
Well, yeah. Oh, let me tell you, my brother and I were in.
But it's a statue. It's now a statue. You know, it's one of the great statues of Washington D.C.
When I was in law school and my brother was finishing undergrad, they had the Oak Lawn tornado. Mm-hmm. And we went out, they were asking for volunteers. So we went out to volunteer to help clean up Oak Lawn. And we got there and we found out that you literally almost have not only a long form birth certificate, but you had a bunch of other references to be allowed through the line. Well, mm-hmm. we finally snuck through the police line and got in to the center of Oak Lawn to find out where can we help. We got there. We had many interesting experiences, but the last one, which is applicable to photojournalism, was we were standing by a building where where volunteers were bringing out food and putting it into a truck to take it to the survivors of this disaster. And they had the camera people taking pictures as they were coming out of the building, and it was hilarious to watch because the cameramen would come out holding the milk and the bread and the boxes and they would say, no, no, go back, do it again, raise the milk a little bit higher. Let's see if we can get the milk. How about the bread? We need the bread. And they did about three or four takes.
Were these video or were these still?
Video.
Okay. Now, video is different from still, I have learned.
Okay.
You know, because still you cannot set anything up. With video, you almost have to mm-hmm. in order to tell the story. You almost have to. Because with video, you have to have some sort of continuity. You're showing an event, a series of events that may last a minute or 2 minutes or 5 minutes. And if you don't set up certain arrangements, you'll never get the flow and you'll never be able to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... And as a still photographer, I've had to shoot video, and it's so bizarre because you've got one side of you saying, no, you can't set up that shot because that's your training as a still photographer. And the other, you have to.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting distinction, which I'd never thought about. So you're actually talking about, though you're talking about visuals, you're talking about radically different purposes.
Presentations.
Presentations, yeah, and capturing what you're trying to, you know, what you're trying to present.
Right.
Now I'd like to switch over and say, you know, you record, you've made books, you've been participating in books about Chicago and other places, right?
Right. Well, I've been very fortunate to have hooked up with Rick Kogan, who's one of the great Chicago historians, writers, characters, wonderful people, just a great guy. And for the last 12 and a half years, we've been doing a column called Sidewalks for mm-hmm. the Tribune. Which has continued even after I took a buyout from the Tribune in 2008. So I continue to do Sidewalks on a freelance basis. Northwestern University Press came to us at one point, 2005, said, we'd love to do a book of your columns. We said, great. There's a lot of red tape to go through with the Tribune to allow this, but we got permission, came out with the first book. The second book...
What was the first one called?
Sidewalks. Strangely right. enough, yes.
Yeah, surprise.
And the second book was called Sidewalks 2.
Very unique. Now, you must have stayed up late coming up with the titles.
It was tough.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
But Sidewalks 2, Northwestern was interested again in doing it, but it would have been like 2 years, you know. They have a long lead time. They have, believe it or not, they have other books to publish.
No.
I know, and I couldn't believe it
Say
either.
Say it ain't but, so, Joe.
So Rick and I decided to form our own publishing company. So we're Sidewalks Book Company, LLC, sidewalksbookcompany.com.
.com, okay, that's fine. We at this station cannot promote the purchase of your books. However, we can say they're very interesting and worth looking at. But go ahead.
But anyway, we're able to, on May 1st of 2009, we, after thinking about this for a long time and going through a lot of anxiety because how are we going to pay for this, and then we decide, well, we'll have to come up with our own money to pay for it, and hopefully we'll get it back. We, on May 1st, we decided to go ahead, so we became an LLC. We used the same designer, the same printer, the same everything. The book is identical in size to Sidewalks 1, and so we were able to get it done within 4 months.
What is it? What's Sidewalks and Sidewalks 2 about? What does it document?
Chicago, people in Chicago, things that wouldn't be front page stories or might not even be stories in general, but they're really interesting because everybody, as Rick likes to say, everybody's extraordinary. Everybody mm-hmm. has their own story. Every story is fascinating. So to find some of these stories that you wouldn't make a story out of it, but makes good reading in a column, mm-hmm. That's what we're interested in are.
So where does the photography come in? I can see the story being, here is Henry Smith, and he's got a great story. He did this, he didn't do that. But where does the photography come? Are we talking, this is an interesting building, or are we talking about, Henry Smith is interesting?
I think where photography comes in and where it always comes in is trying to make the most interesting picture you can mm-hmm. That will go along with whatever the story is. And so that's my job. And
But it's documenting people as opposed to events?
It's documenting them, but it's more an emphasis on style than on documentation, I think.
Okay.
So, and with the column, I have a lot more leeway to do all sorts of things. Not total leeway, but quite a bit more leeway.
Rick comes from a family of, his father was a writer. I believe it was his
absolutely.
Mother a writer.
Yes, his mother was actually a reporter for the Chicago Tribune.
Okay. And I mentioned this to him. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I had a book of his, which was passed down from my grandfather. It was called Lords of the Levee,
mm-hmm.
and it was a history
which may be made into a movie.
You're kidding.
No, no. Rick was just out in Hollywood a couple of weeks ago.
And that, now that's a delayed movie, because it
yeah, really.
Back in, what, the 40s or 50s?
No, well, no. That's a good question. I was going to say 60s.
But well, could be. But any, well, I'm not sure, because...
You might be right. It might be 50s.
I got a book... Got this book from my grandfather, who annotated.
Oh, really?
And said, "Oh, this didn't happen that way," or "Oh, he really got this one right," because he had lived through the Lords of the Levee when he was a young man, and was involved with the politicians in Chicago and the famous alderman Hinky Dink Kenna, Bathhouse John Coughlin, and so on.
Back at the turn of the last century.
That's right. And they were a wild group of people.
Yeah, they kind of
set the tone for Chicago politics forever.
Make Chicago aldermen today seem just like sweethearts.
Tame. Yeah. But at any rate, you moved on from just being a reporter. And how long did you do that?
How long was I a reporter?
A photographer for the paper.
Oh, nearly 39 years.
What is the most interesting thing that you captured or watched in the course of those years? That's a good long stretch of history of America and Midwest and Chicago.
I don't know if there's a most interesting. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things, but the one that always pops to mind is one that I did when I was fairly new. Been a photographer for 4 or 5 years by that point. Was I wanted to do a story on Led Zeppelin when they came to Chicago, and I didn't want to do just the normal, you know, performance kind of stuff, but they were known to go to the blues bars on the South Side and hang out there when they weren't performing, you know, and they were great fans of Buddy Guy, and they'd go to the Checkerboard Lounge. And so I started getting in contact with their publicist about a couple of months before they were coming, and so we're talking back and forth. He was in New York. And so anyway, it was all set up, and I was going to be going out with these guys when they got to town. So they get to town, and the publicist calls me out of the blue on some, like, 10 o'clock in the morning one day, and he said, there's been a change of plans. He said, Robert Plant has laryngitis, and so they have to, you know, postpone their show here in Chicago. The other three are going to ride in their private jet out to L.A. Do you want to go along?
Oh.
And it took me about 3 seconds. not that long, actually.
The sound didn't bounce off the moon, right?
It's like, holy cow. So, so I did. So they were leaving almost right away. So, I mean, I had to kind of fly with the shirt on my back, grabbed a toothbrush and you know, the limo picked me up, and there was Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones and a couple of groupies sitting in the back, and I sat in the front with the driver, and we went off to O'Hare, and then took on. They had the coolest jet I have ever been on. It was a Boeing 720.
Oh, wow.
That was their own plane, and they had redesigned the entire inside so that there weren't seating like any seating I'd ever seen in an airplane. There were swivel chairs, there were couches. There was that was in the front half of the cabin. The back half, there was a bar along one side that John Paul Jones with a keyboard behind it. So John Paul Jones would serve drinks and play on the keyboard, and there were people standing at tables and drinking. And then behind that, there was a bedroom with a double bed in it and a shower off to one side. I want a plane like that.
And you could write it off as a tax deduction if you entertain people.
Yeah, right? Which is all you do, right?
That's right. We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Charles Osgood, photographer extraordinaire, part-time resident of Harbor Country, former Chicago Tribune photographer. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about a different area dealing with photography. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. We're now back with Charles Osgood, photographer, collaborator with Sidewalks, column in the Chicago Tribune.
With Rick Hogan.
With Rick Hogan. We'll be sure that Rick gets the fact that you did pump his name as well.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, he'll probably not listen to this. But
he will. No, we'll make sure that he listens to it.
Oh, okay.
That you definitely pumped him, so he has to do the same for you.
Oh, he does that every Sunday.
Okay, all right. Now, Charles, I mentioned one of my favorite photographers, Yusuf Karsh. I love the paint, the portraits that he mm-hmm. did.
Stunning lighting.
Yeah. And one of the ones I was thinking about is his photographic portrait of Winston Churchill.
No, of course, yeah.
And a great, great picture. I am told that he got the image.
Mm-hmm. I think I know what you're going to say.
From taking Winston Churchill's cigar away.
Yes.
Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I don't know if it's correct, but I mean, that's the story that goes around. So I wouldn't be surprised because Churchill has this kind of annoyed, menacing look on his face, which mm-hmm. makes it an interesting picture.
Well, the story was that he had was looking for a way to capture the spirit of Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm just going on third or 15th hearsay, but he couldn't quite get it right. And then he saw the cigar and the opportunity, and he just snatched it away and took a picture.
Right.
And it was this great living treasure.
Yeah, and he probably had a long cord with the shutter release on it. And so he was holding that in his left hand and pulled the cigar with his right hand because, you know, that expression doesn't last that long.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's how he did it. Beyond
the work that you did as a capturer of events, did you get into portrait photography?
I worked out of the photo studio for 4 years. So mm-hmm. you do a lot of portraits, you do a lot of fashion. At that time, that's all changed. But at that time, there's fashion, portraiture, food photography, which is a whole different ballgame. And what else? Tabletop.
Mm-hmm. Did you take, when you're flying out on the big plane on the 720 for this wonderful rock group, did you take pictures?
Well, that was the deal. They said, okay, you can come along. It's the deal. You can come along, but when we tell you to put the camera away, you got to put the camera away.
Mm.
So I said, okay, you know, what am I going to say now? And so I had about 20 minutes, and that was 20 minutes of the dullest part of the trip, as you can well imagine. So I didn't look at these pictures for probably 15 years, and somebody wanted to see them again sometime, so I refound them, and I looked at them as, you know, because I had all these incredible memories of what went on in that flight, and I looked at the pictures, and I mean, they're okay. I mean, some of them are kind of fun, but they aren't nearly as wild as my memories of that flight were.
What are the pictures that you remember the most and that came out, I mean, regardless of what the event was, but that you say, you look back now and you say, oh, that was a hell of a good picture.
You put me on the spot. And I approach every day differently, and every day is a new day, and I try to make every picture I take. I love that somebody else said this. So it's not my idea. When some photographer was asked, what's the best picture you ever took? And he said, the last one.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm gonna stick with that.
You like that?
That's cool.
Because that always says, come, look at me. Let me take your picture now because it'll be better than the last one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And you'll be my best subject, and you will live forever. You'll be the Winston Churchill of my career.
Yeah, and I have a tendency almost, unfortunately, to remember all the ones I blew. Right?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember all the blown pitches when I pitched baseball, watching the ball fly over my head, you know, hundreds and hundreds of feet into the air and hundreds of feet beyond the stadium. I remember those, every one of them. What's up for you now? What you're continuing? Are you going to come up with a new book?
What's that?
Sidewalks 3.
Love to do Sidewalks 3, and we have the material, but we don't have the money. So
yeah,
I doubt if it'll ever come to pass. But if anybody in your listening audience wants to invest in a Sidewalks 3 book, we'll be sure to put their name in it.
Well, you've already given them your web address, so
yeah. Which unfortunately I pay very little attention to.
Oh, there you go. Doesn't help
but if,
me much.
But if they email me there, it automatically goes to my other email, which I take a look at.
So. Okay, you and Kogan, how did you meet?
Oh, that's a great story. We met, you know, Coco Taylor.
I know the name.
Coco Taylor, Queen of the Blues.
Okay.
So when Kogan was freelancing for the Tribune back in 1987, he got the assignment to do Coco Taylor, and I got the assignment to take pictures. So that's where we met. Mm-hmm. We both showed up at the door, at her door of her house on the south side, and she answered the door, hair and curlers and a nightgown and house coat, and I said, yes, and Rick said, well, I'm Rick Kogan, you know, we're from the Tribune, we're supposed to meet you at 10 o'clock this morning. Oh, is that today? Oh, I didn't know it was today. Oh, well, come on in, you know, and then her husband Pops was there, and he, you know, he was kind of looking at us with a evil eye, but
I remember I was in public life. I'm a recovering politician, and I remember a lesson that I learned way back in the beginning when I was first the subject of interviews and cameras stuck in my face and whatnot. The first thing I remembered being told is when the person comes in for the to do the interview with you, don't be overwhelmed by the face. Remember that the photographer, the cameraman, is going to be the one that really catches your life and puts it on.
Mm-hmm.
And often the reporter or the face is transitory, is just getting started and is going to move on, but that reporter, that photographer will be there forever. And that they actually bring along those reporters. They basically, the reporters will say, "Gee, what should I do with this story?" And the report.
Well, cameraman, who brings along the reporter?
The cameraman. I mean, I'm sorry. The TV, for example, the TV reporter comes to your office and he wants to do a story about this indictment or whatever it happens to be. The person who captures you and the story often, in the best is the cameraman. They have they have more experience. They have a better idea of how this story is going to appear than even the reporter does.
It really depends.
Really?
Yeah, depends on. I mean, sometimes it'll be an older reporter and a younger photographer. You don't know.
Well, my experience has been 90% of the time, it was the older cameraman, the younger reporter, and I watched it happen over and over again that they would submit the questions. They'd say, "Well, Charlie, why don't you ask him about?" We'll take this two shot here, here's what we'll do.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think it really depends on who's got the more experience, and somebody with a lot of experience. I would say generally it's the reporter that calls the shots, but a lot of times if it's an inexperienced reporter, they'll defer to the photographer, and you know, every situation is different.
It's different. Unfortunately, we are now out of time.
I can't believe it.
I know.
You said this time was going to fly, and I said, no, it's going to drag on for, okay.
All right. So thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Respect. We enjoyed it, and maybe we can get you to come back when you come out with Sidewalks 3 Prime.
Okay, just give John a call anytime you got the money, and he can contact me, and
right,
we'll be all set.
The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every Sunday morning at 11 and every Thursday morning at 10. And until next time, remember, if you show respect to other people, other people will show respect to you.